Okay, the next kina we go to now is kina Chaf Aleph. We skipped to Chaf Aleph. And for those of you for whom this will hopefully give some chizuk, we have about an hour left. A little bit more, but basically an hour left. So we're in the home stretch. If you made it this far, you can do it. Do not give up now. That would be really chaval. We're almost there. Six more kinos in an hour, Mirtz Hashem, until we get to the end of davening in Mincha. So Kina Chaf Aleph, of course, is very, very famous. Arze Halavonon Adirei HaTorah Balei Trisin B'Mishnu U'B'Gemara. This is about the Haruge Malchus, Asaret Haruge Malchus, two times a year. This is an integral part of our liturgy, of course, on Yom Kippur and Musaf, as well as on Tisha B'Av. There are slight differences between the different presentations. There's actually a lot of academic work on the texts that we use in Musaf on Yom Kippur and the text of this Kina. But one thing is common to both, which is, we've mentioned this every year, it's important to know, despite the fact that Chazal referred to them as the Asar HaRuge Malchus, it's not meant to be a historical depiction. They did not all live at the same time. If you know anything about the history of the Tanaim, many of these people lived before, after. They didn't all live at all at the same time. And yet, collectively, over the generations, again, I'm not a historian or academics, I don't know exactly the history of these piyutim, but they've become melded together and viewed in that light. And these are, there's a compounding set of circumstances which lead to the horror and the pain of this kina, whether you're saying it in Musaf on Yom Kippur or now. And that is the combination of, you have the biggest Gedolei HaTanaim, you have the Gedolei Gedolim, Chananya ben Trajon, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, Rabbi Lazar ben Shamua, Rabbi Chanina, Gadol, you have, of course, Rabbi Akiva, the most famous, Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol, I mentioned. Incredible Gedolei Tanaim. And it wasn't just that they died, but as we say in the Kina itself, we referred to what occurred to them as the Misa Meshuna V'Chamura. Right? It was horrible, graphic, perverted, just horrific, horrific deaths, which are, I wouldn't call it in detail, but they are graphically described in the Kina itself. Again, worth reading slowly. If you don't understand all the Hebrew, definitely worth looking in English if you have something like that, because the graphic nature is the point of this kina. I think the message for us, and we try to underscore this every year, is not so much the graphic and horrible nature of it, because that we've seen in other kinos already, but the chiddush here, of course, is that a dimension of the churban is the destruction and the death of Gedolei Torah. As Chazal say in multiple places, that Misas Tzadikim, in some places it says Kisreifas Beis Elokeinu, in other places it says Gedola Mimisas Elokeinu. We've mentioned in the past Rav Ruderman, Zechron Levracha, the Rosh Yeshiva of Ner Yisrael. So a number of years ago, the yeshiva in Baltimore put out a sefer called Sichas Avodas Levi. He published at least one or maybe two Sfarim in his lifetime. Lumdisha, very complicated Sfarim. He picked the name of Avodas Levi. Those are his Sfarim. But this was a write-up of his Sichot in the Beis Medrash, more Agadic, more Musar, Hespedim he had given over the years. So it was after he died, way after he died, that they wrote this. And they called it Sichas Avodas Levi. So there's a section there of Hespedim that he gave for various Gedolim. And in multiple of the Hespedim, he asked the question, there seems to be a stira, that some of the Makoros seem to say that the death of a tzaddik is as bad as the Churban, and other times it says the death of the tzaddik is worse than the Churban. And over the years, we've mentioned that in two different Hespedim, one of them was his Hesped for Rav Henkin, and one of them was his Hesped for Rav Huttner, he gave two different answers to the question, although they're very similar. In one case, he said that the difference is, you sort of have certain tzaddikim who are just by themselves, they sit and learn, and their influence is incredible, just because they exist. Kisreifas Beis Elokeinu. But then you have other great Rabbanim who also teach Torah to other people. And their death is even worse than the Churban. The other time he spoke about this, he said that you have certain Gedolim who keep to themselves, and that's as bad as the Churban itself. And you have others who do acts of chesed. They're community people. They're more extroverted. And you'll not only have stories about all the Gemara that they learned, but you have stories of all the Masa Chesed that they did. Not that the other type is bad, they're just more introverted, they're not people, they're not a people person. But you have other people who are men of the people, so to speak, and you have a lot of stories of their Chesed, and they're helping the widow and the orphan, v'chule, v'chule. I mean, we've mentioned those two ideas in the past. I'd like to use that framework to talk about two Gedolim who died this year. Baruch Hashem, we don't, other than in recent memory, other than the Harnof Pigua, when Rav Moshe Tversky, Hashem Yimkom Damo, was killed, we haven't had a situation in which a Talmid Chacham of such a first rank was killed by an enemy. We have Hamonam who were killed, unfortunately, but we do have Gedolim who just die, sometimes just from old age. And even though that's not the same thing as it happened in the Kina, in the Churban, but we try most years to take opportunity to do a little bit of a mini hesped or some words of appreciation of Gedolim who have died and are no longer with us since last year's Tisha B'Av. And I'd like to mention two. One who is obviously and unquestionably the most famous person who died in the past year, and one who was so tsanua and so under the radar that it could be that many of you never even heard of him in life or death. And therefore it's tafka important to mention him. So the first one who we'll mention very briefly, because he's the one that we all know about, we all talked about, and is the most famous, was Rav Chaim Kanievsky. When Rav Chaim died, the day of the funeral, I spoke in Gush. And I mentioned Dafka in Gush, how important I was, I thought, to appreciate him because he was so different. There are Haredi Gedolim who are involved and connected to the Tzioni world. In no meaningful way could one say that Reb Chaim Kanievsky was. You have Haredi Gedolim who are teachers of Torah, and lots of people, even sometimes from Hezder Yeshivas or others, go to their Shiurim. Reb Chaim Kanievsky didn't give Shiurim. And if you, and this is not the time to get into it, although I spoke a little bit about it at the time, his learning style was very much like his uncle, like the Chazon Ish. It was not the typical learning style. It wasn't brisker at all. Not the Mir version of Brisk, not the Chevron version of Brisk, not the Gush version of Brisk, not the YU version of Brisk, nothing. It was a completely different style, which made it much less likely that typical guys, certainly typical guys in Gush, would be familiar with him. And I didn't think that's a criticism, it's just the reality. Especially people who were young Talmidim now, that means that they were, you know, only at the end of his life when he was much older and harder to access. But Dafka, because of that, it was so important to appreciate what he represented. So what I spoke about then, and I'll just mention only in a minute now, but that was the entire Sicha then, I said if you had to pick one Mida, which was the most Afyen, the one that most characterized him, was his Hasmada. He was a Shakdan, not only of this door, but of many, many Doros. You can't imagine a masmid on this level. I mean, he needed to learn like the rest of us need to breathe. It's just unbelievable and astounding. So that's something that even today we should just take account of, the fact that the world does not have that level of asmud anymore. It never existed before him. It won't exist after him. It was mamish yachid many, many doros. Again, it was the stories that they told, if you didn't know any better, you would assume they were totally exaggerated, apocryphal, but he was living in our day and age. It wasn't like an article story from 500 years ago. And many, many people across the spectrum of unimpeachable integrity testified to just astounding, astounding accomplishments, which were not per se because of brilliance, but just because of unbelievable dedication to learning. He had what he called his chayvus. He made a commitment at some point that every year he's going to, at the time he died, I knew all the details. I can't remember all the details now. Every year, a Siyam, a Shas Bavli, Shas Yerushalmi, all of Zohar, all of course, Chumash, come on, of course, maybe Mishnah, I don't remember anywhere, all of Shulchan Aruch, all of Tur, I can't even remember. I mean, for a whole lifetime, most of us can't learn all that. Every single year, he made it as a chov, and he took it as a chov. Therefore, he wouldn't go to sleep unless he learned enough that day to keep up. You don't even know what you have to learn each day to keep up with that. It is stunning. Every now and then I have a Havamina, and I'll be honest with you, it's not my Yetzer Tov. It's clear my Yetzer Hara. It looks like a Yetzer Tov, but I know myself it's my Yetzer Hara that I want to do Shas in 1 year. 7.5 daf in a day, you could do it. And I know people who make a Siyum Shas every year. So every now and then, my Yetzer Hara wants me to do it. It's one of the rare times I beat my Yetzer Hara. I should be as successful with my other Yetzer Hara.
But just to do that is mind-boggling. To do that in Yerushalmi also, and in Tur, and in Zohar, and in Rambam, that's nothing he did every year. It's just not believable. But here's the point. He was so introverted, right? He wasn't a people person. In his whole life, I don't know if he gave 10 shurim. When his father died, when the stipler died, or some mini, mini number. The year when his father died, he gave a shir in Yerushalmi for the stipler, I think, in the year of his Yud Beis Chodesh. And then maybe a little bit on his yahrzeit after that. That's it. And there are all sorts of frum reasons why. I don't believe any of them. The real reason is because it wasn't his personality. He was an introvert. He wasn't a speaker. He wasn't... That's not a criticism. It's just a fact. Not everyone has the same personality. And he understood better than almost anyone what his tafkid was. If you would have told him, no, the right thing to do is you used to run around giving shurim, that would not have been the right way for him to use his life. It would have been a disaster. That would have been a chorban. He wouldn't have been good at it. He would have learned much less. He would have written much less. He did exactly. I have no doubt what Hashem wants me to do in my life necessarily, or what you do. I have no doubt what Hashem wanted him to do in his life. It's exactly what he did. Zitzen and learning. Just to sit and learn. And yet, here's the amazing thing. You would think, based on what I'm saying, that his death is kisreifas beis Elokeinu, because he was one of those gedolim who was just to himself. But it wasn't true. First of all, what people don't realize, before he became famous, with the buas and all the other stuff, and the lines out the door, before that, we'll get to that in a second. Before that, he decided, again, this is totally idiosyncratic, I wouldn't recommend this, there's no other gedolim who ever did this. I don't know what his reasons were, but he decided that his tafkid then was to be a sandik at brisses. That was a skula he wanted. And it was a known thing. Anyone who would ask him to be a sandik, he would say yes. In the end of his life, and he didn't do it at all, but there was some tikkun when he got older, people would go to him in his house or letterman shul to have him as sandik. I don't think he said taklin for like, I don't know how many decades of his life. I know that's tempting for some of you. But come up with another way. If you make siumim, that's like another reason not to, maybe. Anyway, but he, when he was younger, he took buses up and down the country to be sandik. Who does such? Now again, it's idiosyncratic. But what Baal Chesed? Somebody in Afula, somebody in Sfat wants, somebody in Be'er Sheva wants to be the sandik. This is before he was famous. He went all around. He spent hours, and even all the stuff at the end of his life with the lines and the bridge and the bua, which many people, v'ani b'tocham, could not relate to. I never went. Did not speak to me. I admit it. But why did he? So, and people were, I was never mezalzel in it, but people were. But why shouldn't you be mezalzel in it? Not only because it's just disrespectful and you should never be mezalzel, but if you think about it, what was happening was so beautiful. Why did he do this? A person who didn't miss a second. Why did he have hundreds of people waiting in line? Why did he do it? Why they wanted to is a different question. But why did he do it? He had nothing better to do with his time. This is a person who didn't waste a second, not you or me. And you or me wouldn't have done it. He did it out of chesed, a gita neshama. Again, you or I, the average person may not be able to relate to it. But if there were, and there were, thousands of Jews, thousands, and not all who usually wore a kippah, thousands of Jews for whom it would give them a chizuk to get some kind of a mini chetzi bracha from him, if it would make them happy, it would help another Jew, he was willing to do it. That's the godless of the bua. It's not that other stuff. They focus usually on the wrong things. The avas Yisrael, that he's willing to do that. Again, it's not the typical avas Yisrael. It's not the way most people are going to express it. That's the way most gedolim will express it. He was unique. But that's where it came from. That's what has to be appreciated. And I want to add one other thing. It's true that he wasn't a teacher, but he didn't keep his Torah to himself. He was a prolific writer. And I want to illustrate why that was so important from another, this is the second time I'll mention him, Baruch Hashem, Reb Shaul Alter. So Reb Shaul Alter comes from a different world. Again, if you are really, really far from the Haredi world, you think everyone who wears black and white is the same. Right? But that's incredibly ignorant. Right? The world of Ger Hasidim and the world of Chaim, of Chazanish and the Knievskis is a completely different world.
every Chassidus has different nuances, let alone that part of the Litvish world and the Bnei Brak Litvish world, the Yerushalayim Litvish world. There's 12 Shvatim even in the Haredi world, like there's 12 Shvatim in the Tzioni world. A lot of nuances. You have to know what's going on. They're not from the same world. Nothing bad, but not from the same world. Rav Shaul Alter went to pay a Shiva call. And there's a video clip of this. It was also sent out. I'm on. I get the emails from his killer every single week. He was sitting by Rav Chaim Knievsky's sons. So here I wrote it down. It started off in Yiddish, but then he responded in Hebrew, interestingly enough. One of Rav Chaim Knievsky's sons asked him, Mahat gehot akesher? Did you have a relationship with our father? So the Ger Rosh Hashiva responds, Haya kesher chazak v'kavua. I was very close with him. I had a regular relationship with him. After all, he says, Hakesher sheli im Rabbi Chaim haya derech hasfarim shelo. B'shloshim shekel hayiti nifkash ito laharbeiz ma'od zman. He was my Rebbe. I never met him, but he was my Rebbe. I had his sfarim. So now we say, and it's a beautiful thing in our generation, I never met Rabbi so-and-so, but I listened to Daf Yomi every day on the internet. I listened to a shurim on Wayu Torah, on this, on that. Okay, at least, but it's not something, you could be a Talmud from somebody even without that. You could be a Talmud from the books. That's an appropriate. He didn't have to write all those books. He could have kept it to himself. But he wanted to share his Torah. It's a very, very beautiful thing we have to appreciate. Number two, even though I spent all this time talking about Reb Chaim, even though I didn't need to, but maybe we forgot after all these months, and it's worth appreciating. Dafka, because he's so far removed from so many of us, we need to spend more time appreciating him. The second person I want to mention died much more recently. Much more recently. And that was Rav Gedalia Tzimbalist. Rav Gedalia Tzimbalist was probably the number one Dayan in the world. Certainly in Israel, in the world. And I'm seen by the look of many of your eyes, you didn't even hear of him. Rav Tzimbalist died not that long ago, at the age of, I think it was, if I remember correctly, 92. He was born originally in Europe. His family made Aliyah when he was very young. And he was raised in Eretz Yisrael. He was a genius, a protege in many ways of Rav Eliyashiv. As a young Dayan, Rav Eliyashiv took him under his wings when Rav Eliyashiv was still in the Rabbanut. Years later, when he would walk into a room, we have testimony, Rav Eliyashiv stood up for him. Even though he's much younger than Rav Eliyashiv. He was born in Minsk, and he learned in Chevron Yeshiva. When he was 16, I don't know if they still have this, but Misrad HaChinuch, or Misrad HaDatot, one of them, had a pras called the Pras HaIlui. The 18 top yeshiva guys in the whole country, the biggest iluim, and he was one of those. He won the Pras HaIlui at 16 years old. His wife was born of Holocaust survivors who lived in America, so he actually spent a little bit of time when he was much younger in America, but then he came back and spent most of his life in Eretz Yisrael. Was a dayan in some of the various different batei din of the Rabbanut, and eventually became a dayan in the Beit Din HaGadol until eventually he retired. Most of his adult life, especially after he became a dayan in the Beit HaGadol, he lived in Tel Aviv. He lived in Bnei Brak. He didn't live in one of the firmer neighborhoods of Yerushalayim. He lived in Merkaz Tel Aviv. He was the rav of a shul. It's a shul that has a website. Okay, do you understand? It wasn't a shtibel. With lots of amcha in the shul, he was makbid his whole life to be part of that. Better than that, what's near his shul in Tel Aviv where he lived? Yeshivat Mala Eliyahu. The Yeshiva Gavoha by Rav Gantz, which is a very super duper Tzioni yeshiva, and he was a regular fixture in the yeshiva. He learned there, he gave shiurim there, he became the posik of the yeshiva. If you Google his name and you want to see Hespedim online for a symbolist, all the video Hespedim are the ones that were given in Yeshiva Mali Eliyahu in Tel Aviv, with all the Tzioni boys who loved him so much for his psak. So he came from, you know, again, he was a protege of Rav Eliyashiv, but very open, very mukurav to everybody. His wife was a renowned psychologist. I think psychologist, not psychiatrist, but renowned. He has a daughter. I don't want to say the name because I don't remember her name. His daughter lives in Harnof, is a leading woman psychologist to this day. Took after her mother. As far as I know, based on my little research, I think they only had that one child. I think they only had the daughter. I couldn't see any reference to any other children. But he was a genius of unimpeachable integrity. I'll mention 2 points and with this we'll conclude. Number one is, how did I first hear his name? Why do I? I'm not any smarter than you. How come he? First of all, let's take a step back. How come no one ever heard of his name?
Because he was zocha to never be involved in politics. He never signed the Kol Kore. He wasn't the head of any miflaga. He didn't do any of that stuff. He just taught, was a dayan, helped people, gave shurim, zehu. He didn't need the accolades. He was kulo substance, number one. So how did I hear about him? I heard about him over 20 years ago, I think, if I remember correctly. I heard about him from Mori Varabi, Rabbi Willig. Why? Because when Rabbi Willig came up with the Heskeim Kedam Nisuin, the RCA, what's now known as the RCA prenuptial agreement, so Rabbi Willig is an expert, so that's why he did it. But if only Rabbi Willig would support it, so his Talmidim would sign the prenup and, you know, maybe nobody else. So L'shem Shamayim, Rabbi Willig has traveled over the years, long and far, to get as many other great poskim and gedolim to sign on to the prenup, to give it more and more validity. Rav Avadji Yosef signed on to it, Rav Shechter signed on to it, Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg signed on to it, Yibar L'chaim, Rav Asher Weiss signed on to it, v'chule, v'chule, and I never heard Rabbi Willig as happy as when he told me, and Rav Gedalia Tzimbalist. And if you know Rabbi Willig at all, that was my imitation. Because that's how you would say it. Gedalia Tzimbalist. He was so excited that Rabbi Gedalia Tzimbalist signed on to this. I said, Rabbi, who's that? I never heard of him. He said, he's the biggest dayan in the world. You don't realize. I said, really? He says, I'll prove it to you. And here's our last point of information. Some of you may know, this is Dafka, a Tisha B'Av topic, but it's not one we're going to talk about. For many, many years, there's been a horrible, horrible machlokas in the Panovich Yeshiva. So I think they've been miyayish on resolving it now, I think, as far as I could tell. But once upon a time, when it was really, really raging, they were going to try to make shalom. So they went to Rav Elyashiv, but he didn't want to touch it. He's appointed, of all people, who's the biggest person who can handle this? Rav Tzimbalist. He'll be the Yochid Mumcha, he'll try to create shalom. Now, as far as I could tell, he wasn't successful. But that's not any fault of his. But who would the whole world be willing to trust with something as contentious and as, the names on each side of that machlokas are the creme de la creme of the Haredi B'nai Brak world. And Rav Tzimbalist, the quiet, shtila hate, the person who would go from that Bez Din to go back to the Yeshiva Mal Eliyahu with the Hezder boys, with the Tzioni boys, to sit and learn. He was the top, top dayan. Rav Elyashiv understood this. If you need something done on that level, you need a Rav Tzimbalist. And he wasn't afraid, even if he got Bezyinus, he wasn't afraid to sign on with the RCA for the prenup. This is a special, special person. Again, it was quiet. He wasn't a rah-rah person. But he really made, in his own way, a tremendous influence. And Chaval al Da'avdin, they don't make him like that anymore, unfortunately. Not in Torah, not in Bretkeit. And Ania Katan would say that the loss of such people is Gedolah Meisrefas Elokeinu. Arzeh Levanon Adi HaTorah, Balei Chisan Mishnah, Uve Gemara. Thank you.